Thanks very much, Lucas. Do we have volume? Is it all okay? Thank you. So we're looking at this particular passage, the last one that Lucas read for us from Matthew 5. And it's part of a series. You realize that. It's part of the Sermon on the Mount, and we've been making our way through the sermon. And this morning we come to quite an interesting section. I came across a staggering statistic the other day. 70% of young men in the States, this is, between the ages of 18 to 24, 70% visit a porn site in a typical month. And even more staggering is that one in three porn viewers is a woman. Don't you find that incredible? Now, it's not just younger people, because you might get that impression from the stats. It's not like when you get to 40, you get beyond this sort of stuff, you sort of... It's a thing of the past. Not at all. It affects all of us of all ages. And so the passage we're looking at is relevant for every one of us, young and old, male and female. And we really need to look at it and to take it seriously. So when you step back from the passage, you'll notice that there are three different sections, three different units, as it were. Jesus, in the first section, in verses 27 to 28, is speaking about the problem of lust in the heart, what you see with your eyes and what you think of in your head. Then there's the bit about cutting away the offending members, responding to the problem. And then in verses 29, and then in verses 31 to 32, there's the whole issue about marriage and divorce. And the question I want you to think about just briefly is, are these just disconnected units? Are these like throwaway or wisdom sort of ideas, like proverbs, just different sort of ideas that Jesus is throwing out there? Or is there something that links them together? Is there a thread running through them? And I want to suggest that they are connected. That they're connected in that the pictures in the mind, the things that we think about of a sensuous nature, can actually, in the end, lead to divorce, make breakdown of marriage. There's some sort of link there. And when you see this thing about cutting away certain members, I think it is a clue, because we think that they're just general comments about sin in general, but I think they're more specific than that. I think he's thinking particularly in terms of lust, in terms of the things that we look at and the things we think about. So I think they are connected. I think there is a thread running through them. The way we interrupt this sort of progression from the things we think about and the things we see to a breakdown in marriage, the way we interrupt that progression is by taking ruthless and decisive action. So they are linked. But there is something else here in our passage. It's in the context in which it occurs, I think, is significant. You'll remember from last week that Jesus was speaking about the righteousness of the Pharisees, and that the righteousness that Jesus expects from his own people is a righteousness that should exceed that of the Pharisees. I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisee, verse 20, and the teachers of the law, you will, unless it exceeds the Pharisees' righteousness, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. See, the Pharisees believed that righteousness was all about outward observance. We looked at this last week, about conformity to the law in an outward sense. As long as you washed your hands in a certain way, as long as you avoided certain foods, as long as you kept the Sabbath holy, whatever that meant, then it was fine. You would have right standing with God. And what Jesus demands of his disciples is a righteousness that exceeds that of the Pharisees, in that it extends beyond outward observance to matters of the heart, a righteousness that reaches into the recesses of your heart and mind. So the Pharisees, for example, we looked at this last week, the Pharisees taught that it was wrong, that murder was wrong, but they were thinking specifically in terms of the act of killing somebody. They limited the sixth commandment to an outward action. And what Jesus does is he says, no, that's not enough. Your righteousness must exceed that, extends beyond that. That when you hate someone in your heart, when you despise somebody, when you rubbish somebody, you in fact are guilty of breaking this very command. And we unpacked that last week and what that was all about. And here in our passage for this morning, the Pharisees, again, were limiting the commandment to something purely external. So we're now looking at the seventh commandment. And the Pharisees, as regards the command not to commit adultery, they thought of adultery purely and simply in terms of the act of sleeping with someone else's wife or husband. You have heard it said, verse 27, you've heard it said, you shall not commit adultery. That's the righteousness of the Pharisee, purely and simply an outward observance. But what Jesus is saying is he's saying, no, it's much more than that. It extends beyond that. And you can see that from verse 28. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. It has been rightly said that the most powerful sexual organs we have are not down there, but up here, in our head, in our mind. The most powerful sexual organs we have are not in our underwear, but in our heads. So listen, we can all agree, I think there's no one would deny that adultery itself is not a good thing. That adultery is something awful, something ugly. And it's ugly for a host of different reasons. For example, it's a gross betrayal of trust. You've made a promise that you've now broken. It's also incredibly selfish. It's just about me gratifying my desires, my needs. It's also damaging to others. You're only concerned about your own pleasure, and you are sparing no thought, no consideration for your husband or your wife, and for the incredible damage you'll do to the kids. It's very selfish. And apart from all of that, it is something that is forbidden by God. He tells us expressly, this is not acceptable behavior. So whichever way you look at it, the physical act of adultery is something shameful and reprehensible. I think we all agree on that. But when it comes to matters of the mind, of thoughts that are going on in our head, what's so wrong with that? I mean, what's the big problem with a little bit of porn gazing? Or if you're a woman, what's so wrong with enjoying the fantasy? It's only a fantasy. You've met some really nice guy at the office, or you've had a conversation with somebody who's a friend, and he is just so nice. And he gets you. Your husband doesn't. And you just have this thing going on in your head about how wonderful it would be for him to have you in his arms and to run his fingers through your hair. What harm is there in that? It's just a fantasy. It's not going to come real. It's not going to happen. So what's the harm? Well, I put that question to our growth group, and our growth group are really insightful, and they made some really wonderful sort of and excellent sort of comments. So I just want to share some of those with you. First of all, because you are dehumanizing the other person, that they've become nothing more to you than an object that you are using for your own gratification. Dehumanizing. And then secondly, because you are damaging yourself. You realize that in terms of pornography itself, that the information is that it's highly addictive. So you find yourself almost obsessed with going back for more and more because it's never satisfactory. It's never satisfying. You develop this urge. And it's only sorted out when you feed the addiction, but then you want to go back again and then again and again. But you also damage yourself in that you allow images into your mind that will never leave you. They are there for good, and they will interfere with future relationships. Then thirdly, you damage the relationship with your partner, with your husband, or with your wife, with your spouse, because you start to compare inevitably the things that have been going on in your head with your partner. And inevitably, you will never match up to this imaginary ideal lover. And so you'll become discontented with your relationship. At the same time, it's an act of disloyalty. It's disrespectful for your partner, to your partner. You're acting in a way that will undermine trust in your relationship. One of the ladies in our group made the comment that when a guy is checking out the pretty ladies, she knows. She just knows. You think that nobody's, you think she hasn't noticed because you've just gone, your eyes have just gone left without actually moving your head. She knows. And basically, it's hurtful. And lastly, you damage your relationship with your Heavenly Father because you come away from, whether if it's pornography or if it's fantasy or something like that, you come away from that feeling dirty, feeling defiled by it. So it sets up some sort of barrier, a barrier between you and your God. It also opens up the door for the devil to play havoc with your headspace. So you'll find yourself worshiping God on a Sunday like this morning, and suddenly there will flash across your mind a picture of a scantily clad woman while you're worshiping. Or you'll be praying, and suddenly you'll have the sensation of being in the guy's arms once again, the guy who was running his fingers through your hair while you're praying. The devil will use it to his advantage. So whilst the act of adultery itself is something awful, the act of lusting in our hearts, what happens, as somebody said, in the brothel of our heart, is also equally damaging. I want you also to notice that there is a progression in these words of Jesus from the temptation itself to the lust to the breakup of a marriage. The adultery that Jesus speaks of in verse 28 is not in the look. The adultery is not in the thought. It's what you do with that look. And it's what you do with that thought. That's what causes the problem. It's one thing to notice that he's a nice and sweet guy. Quite another thing to start imagining what it's like to be sleeping in his arms. It's one thing to appreciate a pretty lady, quite another thing to start undressing her. So there is nothing wrong with noticing a pretty lady or admiring an attractive person. That's not the issue. The question is what happens next. Do you keep looking straight ahead? Do you put the thought aside? Or do you take a second look and then a third one? Do you begin to drool at the mouth? Do you find yourself playing over in your mind the scenario where the two of you are romantically involved? Do you savor the thought of having sex with a virtual prostitute? The other night, Barnaby Joyce and Vicky Campion were interviewed on Sunday night about their affair. Although Barnaby doesn't like the word affair, because it has negative connotations. He was married with four children, but he didn't like the negative connotation of an affair. And Vicky Campion offered this excuse. She said, "You can't help who you fall in love with." No, Vicky, you can. You most certainly can. Adultery doesn't just happen. The idea germinated early on in your relationship. And instead of nipping it in the bud, you incubated the idea, and adultery was born in your heart long before you gave in to the impulse. But before we're too hard on Barnaby and Vicky, recognize that this is something that we are all susceptible to. It can overtake in every one of us. Even the strong have been known to fall. So the question arises, what precautions can we take to make sure it doesn't happen to us, to me, to you? Well, Jesus tells us in verse 29. If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. So why do we not have more people in our church with patches over their eyes? Why do we not have more one-armed people in our congregation? And as we explained last week, the reason is because Jesus never intended for us to take his words literally. If you gouge out your left eye, what's to stop your right eye doing the perving? And a one-handed man can still do a whole lot of stuff with his other hand. And besides, if Jesus is advocating for marriage, which he is, for good marriage, people who mutilate themselves don't make wonderful marriage partners. It's a little bit like the song that I heard the other day about a man who is about to enjoy his first night with his new bride until she removes her wig and her glass eye and her prosthetic leg until there is more of her on the chair than in the bed. So Jesus does not intend to be taken. Sorry, guys. You're allowed to laugh, you know, if you want to. So, forgive me. So Jesus does not intend to be taken literally. There was this one occasion when I was driving down the road with my dad. He was elderly at that stage, and he was in the passenger seat. I was in the driver's seat, and somebody got in the way, didn't give way at a roundabout or something like that. Can't remember the details, but I do remember Dad reaching across from the passenger seat, my car, I was driving, and he banged on the horn. And I turned to my dad and I said, "If you do that again, I'm going to cut off your hand." Now he knew, and I knew, that I didn't mean it literally. But he understood the underlying message. "Dad, don't you dare do that again. It's just not acceptable." And even though Jesus doesn't mean these words literally, we understand the underlying message. Your response to the temptation needs to be drastic. Your response to the action needs to be drastic. So what, that being the case, what can we do to protect ourselves from this sort of thing? And here again, our growth group were very wise and made some really wonderful suggestions. Let me share them again with you. It's okay to appreciate beautiful people, but avoid the second and the third look. Good advice. Be careful about being in a counseling situation with someone of the opposite sex. Dangerous. If you recognize that you have feelings for somebody else other than your spouse, confess that to your partner and ask for his or her help. Not easy, but really, really does make a difference. If you are working alongside someone and you are experiencing a growing attraction for that person, change the environment of your work. I heard of one individual who took the difficult step of actually resigning from his company because he valued his marriage more than he valued his work. And when it comes to pornography, instead of gouging out your eye, try tearing up those glossy magazines. And instead of cutting off your hand, try cutting off your access to those porn sites on your computer. And when you feel that irresistible urge, take avoidance action. Pray for help. Go for a walk. Work out at the gym. Phone a confidant. Confide in your wife. Act decisively to break the cycle. And it's really, really important that you do that, because if you don't, it will land you in deep, deep trouble. Rico Tice expresses it this way: hell is the trajectory for inactivity. In the final section, we're going to close with this. Jesus turns to divorce. I haven't got a lot of time, so I'm not going to go into a lot of depth and detail, but I just want to very quickly cover this. The Pharisees, you see, again, this issue of their righteousness, they were preoccupied, strangely enough, not with the act of divorce, but with the way one divorced, with the protocols in place, with the literally with the documents that needed to be organized for, like a certificate of divorce needed to be given to the wife. When you did that, you freed her up from becoming an adulteress. You made it legitimate for her to marry somebody else, and you yourself weren't making her an adulteress. But you could, from a Pharisaical point of view, you could divorce your wife for a variety of reasons. Sometimes if you just didn't find her attractive anymore, or if her cooking wasn't up to scratch. The Pharisees were concerned about the way in which the divorce happened. And again, Jesus says, no, not for my people. The righteousness of those who follow me must exceed the Pharisees' righteousness by far. As far as Jesus was concerned, the documentation was secondary. Much more important was that people remained faithful to their marriage. God's intention was that marriage should be exclusive and permanent, lifelong. Yes, there are exceptional circumstances, and you can see one of them here in the passage. The issue of sexual immorality would be an exceptional circumstance. But the force of Jesus' argument here is, remain faithful to your marriage partner. Easy divorce made people into adulterers. Now, Paul, in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, does give us, he extends the issue of exceptional circumstances to include desertion. If your husband or your wife leaves, let them go. And we could also possibly add to that other exceptional circumstances like physical abuse, psychological abuse, things that are going to put the wife in danger, in harm's way. But the point that Jesus is making, the point that we must get clear is this, that easy divorce is adultery. Marriage is meant to be for life. So let's think about this in terms of how it impacts our own lives. Are you guilty of some of the things that we've been looking at this morning? I know that I am. Do you feel convicted by Jesus' words this morning? I know that I do. The good news, though, is that forgiveness is at hand. Adultery of the mind does not put us beyond the scope of Jesus' capacity to save us. And even if you have been unfaithful to your wife, to your marriage partner, even though your sin is great, and it is, the reality is that Jesus' sacrifice on the cross is greater. As long as you acknowledge the awfulness of what you've done, and as long as you come before God in penitence and humility, trusting in the forgiveness that Jesus has won for us. If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. But if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us and to cleanse us from all our unrighteousness. Amen.